Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Morning, we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11. Text 23, Lord Krishna's entrance into Dwaraka. Svayam cha guru, svayam cha guru bi viprai.
Svayam cha guru bi viprai.
Sararai stavire api.
Sararai stavire api.
Ashibi yu jamano nye.
Ashibi yu jamano nair.
Vandibis chavi shat puram.
Vandibis chavi shat puram.
Svayam cha guru bi viprai.
Svayam cha guru bi viprai.
Sararai stavare api.
Sararai stavare api.
Ashibi yu jamano nye.
Ashibi yu jamano nye.
Vandibis chavishat puram.
Vandibis chavishat puram.
Someone else?
Svayam cha guru bir viprai.
Svayam cha guru bir viprai.
Sadarai stavirai rapi.
Sadarai
stavirai rapi.
Ashir bir yujamano nyair.
Ashir bir yujamano nyair.
Vandibish chavishat puram.
Vandibish chavishat puram.
Svayam cha guru bir viprai.
Svayam cha guru bir viprai.
Sadarai stavirai rapi.
Sadarai stavirai rapi.
Ashibir yujamanon yair.
Ashibir
yujamanon yair.
Svayam cha guru bivipray.
Svayam cha guru bivipray.
Padare stabire rapi.
Padare stabire rapi.
Asibi yujamano ne.
Asibi yujamano ne.
Vandibi sabishat puram.
Vandibi sabishat puram.
Translation. Then the Lord personally entered the city, accompanied by elderly relatives and invalid brahmanas with their wives, all offering benedictions and singing the glories of the Lord. Others also praised the glories of the Lord. Purport. The brahmanas in society were never attentive to banking money for future retired life. When they were all invalids, they used to approach the assembly of the kings, and simply by praising the glorious deeds performed by the kings, along with their wives, they would be provided with all necessities of life. Such brahmanas were not, so to speak, flatterers of the kings, but the kings were actually glorified by their actions, and they were sincerely still more encouraged in pious acts by such brahmanas in a dignified way. Lord Sri Krishna is worthy of all glories, and the praying brahmanas and others will glorify themselves by chanting the glories of the Lord. I'll read this verse again. Figure out the scrolling. Svayam cha guribi viprai sararai stavire api ashibi yujamano nye pandivis chavishat puram. Then the Lord entered the city accompanied by elderly relatives and invalid brahmanas with their wives, all offering benedictions and singing the glories of the Lord. Others also praised the glories of the Lord. So after the reciprocation of welcome and offering obeisances and respect, now Krishna is entering into Dwapara. And here it is said, accompanied by elderly relatives and invalid brahmanas and their wives. So, of course, one has to give proper respect to the elderly, and of course the relatives were very close to Krishna. It is said actually in the Shastras that one has to give respect to persons of four categories. One is supposed to be given respect if they are elderly in age. In the Vedic society, one who is elderly in age would be given respect by all. And of course, one was a respectable person being elderly in age. Today, these days, of course, in Kali Yuga, people get elderly and they act in all sorts of frivolous and nonsense ways, and that are hardly worthy of respect by their activities. But they don't act like elderly ladies and gentlemen. It's trying to enjoy sense gratification like young people. So, unfortunately, that's the situation. But even though I know I've heard young people sometimes criticize the elderly for trying to copy the activities of even modern day young people, say, complain about that. So it looks silly, you know, someone elderly trying to, you know, I saw a just recently, somewhere I can't remember, but there was the traffic lights, a big new sports car pulled up, and it was like a little flash sports car with an open roof. And what do they call it? Convertible with an open roof. So then I looked a little further to the driver, and the driver was this look kind of like an elderly man. It looked like he's 80 with a scarf around his neck and a kind of new new sports coat and everything like that. And he had a young blonde wife. I don't know if it was a wife or what. But anyway, so I was thinking, well, he's an elderly man trying to imitate the young. So it didn't look, it looked a little silly. But anyway, so this is the situation. But in former times, the elderly were respected and they acted in a respectable way, and because of the culture and their seniority in society. So this is one category. The elderly have to be shown respect. And of course, elderly relatives, they are accompanying Krishna, that's just natural. But anyway, in society, elderly, and another category mentioned in the Shastras, if someone is learned in knowledge, if someone is a scholar, no matter what their age, they have to be respected. So, scholarly and another person to be respected by social position. If someone has a big position in society, the king, or you know, some big powerful personality, leader of the city, the country, some big position in society, they have got there by their pious credits, and so they have to be respected. And also, they are doing a very social position. Someone in a big position, at least in the Vedic times, was shown respect. And then by tapasya, this is another category. By if someone is very austere and renounced, detached, and living like a sage or a yogi or something like that, they would be given respect. So in the Vedic times, this was the situation. But unfortunately, in modern times, whether people are given respect for all sorts of reasons other than proper reasons. So especially Brahmanas and elderly Brahmanas, and here also invalid Brahmanas. So naturally, someone who's elderly and someone who's invalid has to be taken care of. And the Brahmanas are so important in society. They're giving valuable input into society by their knowledge. Giving the instruction from the Veda, of course, in transcendental knowledge. They are also Vipra. They were very learned in specific areas. They would go from home to home and not only give education in the knowledge of mantra and ceremony and so on, and yajna. But they would also be some of them were very had specific knowledge of perhaps medicine, perhaps music, perhaps art. They taught that. So there were actually in the Vedic times, as mentioned in the Shastra, there were no need of big hospitals. And neither people were getting so sick. Now you see in society, huge hospitals, they take up blocks. Take up blocks and blocks and blocks. Just one hospital, blocks and blocks and blocks in the middle of the city. And they're getting bigger and bigger and bigger. You always see that they're always expanding them. Another block. And so many people are getting sick. So many diseases coming up they never heard of before. Variants of those diseases. And then to staff all that, the cost of the government. But actually, in the Vedic times, there was no need of big. They didn't have huge big hospitals, because the Brahmanas and other qualified people would go. And actually, the Brahmanas would give this. They would treat. They would go in the household and treat people who were sick, and they would give knowledge for free. Brahmanas don't charge. They may be given dakshina. That is to be expected. That is proper. One has to give dakshina, but that dakshina is given according to the capacity of the person given. In other words, if someone was a very poor person, and they would just give whatever they could afford, and the Brahmin expected that, and he didn't ask for more. He just accepted what was given, if it was a proper thing to give. Of course, sometimes people in the modern society, they give in charity, they don't give proper things. I remember even at the time of my initiation, the temple president said, well, now you're getting initiated. You have to collect dakshina Prabhupada, and you have to go door to door and bang on the door and then ask them and tell whoever comes to the door that, your guru has come and you're having a big initiation ceremony and as proper, the etiquette is to collect and offer, give some offering to the guru. So now we did that. And that was going on for years. In the first years of the movement anyway, we in Australia, we used to do that. All the initiates would do that. We go door to door. And some people came forward, and some people, you know, they wouldn't even open the door. But some people opened the door and closed it again. But actually, I found that many, and we were going Dodie and Curtin, and many were, and that was only the few. And they opened the door and they would give something. And of course, some of those things weren't acceptable. I remember someone coming out with a dozen eggs or something. Oh, here, look, here's a dozen eggs. I said, well, thank you very much, but we don't eat eggs if you've got some fruit or something like that. Or they'd give something else, or they'd give some money, you know. And then we'd, you know, we'd collect that. And we'd try to follow the Vedic system, the tradition, because the brahmacharis would go out and the disciples getting initiated would go. So it's proper to give an offering to the brahmana, and but according to one's capacity. If someone was very poor, they would just give, whatever they had. If someone had more, they would give more. And someone was very rich, they should give more. And the brahmana would accept that. But the brahmana shouldn't charge. And they were giving offerings, and they would have to be supported by the government and by the kings. So then there would be no worry. Now these days they're not supported, and you'll find actually it's quite common when you go to India, Vrindavan area, and the pandas are begging so much money. Maybe it's a combination of that some of them become very greedy. But at the same time, they're not being supported, and so they've got families and so on, and they have to ask. You know, they shouldn't actually have to ask; they should just be given. But anyway, so and Prabhupada mentions here the brahmanas in society were never attentive to banking money for future retired life, because as I just said, they were. Given donations, and also the kings would have ceremonies and invite brahmins and offer them all sorts of different things, not just money, but offerings of maybe calves or cows or clothes or grains or ghee or so many things. So along the way, and then of course when they were old. They would be provided for, of course. Of course, this was just natural. Elderly people have to be provided. Now these days in the Kali Yuga, everything is topsy-turvy. Even non-Brahmanas in Vedic society, people were cared for by the family. Brahmanas would be cared for by their families, and they'd also be cared for by others in the village or the town or the city and by the kings and our authorities. They are valuable members of society. Elderly are valuable members of the society by their wisdom and knowledge, but all members. And so if someone in a family, they have the children and they are providing for the children, and it's just natural in Vedic society that when they grow old and the children grow up, then they will look after the elderly parents. That's just a natural consequence of Vedic society, that they would look after the elderly parents. In other words, generally it was the eldest son or something like that who would take that responsibility or was shared in the family. Generally, it's just the son's responsibility to look after the elderly parents, and they would live. You see pictures of Prabhupada where he's in his home when he was young. He had his mother and father living with him, and that was just a natural a duty, an obligation. So so the parents wouldn't have to worry about retirement funds or pensions or social security or whatever. They wouldn't have to worry about that because they knew that their children would look after them. And they could just come and live. They would be given a little area. They can just come whatever they needed, the children. Because after all, they had worked very hard when the children were young, to look after the children, and it cost so much money. I read an article some time back that said that to raise a child these days in many developed countries in the world, from when they're young to when they're 20, costs a lot of money, $500,000 or something like that, or maybe more, depending on the circumstances. how much it costs if you add it all up. Some company or some organization has done a calculation. It costs so much money. So the parents, they've worked hard. Of course, they do it out of love. It's natural. But so they've looked after the children for so many years. And then at the end of their lives, the children look after them. It's just a natural part of Vedic society. But of course, again, in Kali Yuga, that doesn't so much happen. We still have some, in some cases, the children looking after the parents, but quite often they're left to their own life. The children, you know, maybe don't even care, or they don't want to look after their parents, it's left to the government to provide pensions or social security or whatever system they have around the world, and it costs the governments huge amounts of money. Now there's doubt whether these sort of social systems can be be maintained, and they're cutting back. Being traveling, and I notice in different countries they're kind of cutting back the social system. And then there's some big disaster, some economic downturn, and then there's no money. So they talk like that. Oh, there won't be any money in the future to look out, even though the people have been working and putting money into social security or pension or whatever, superannuation, some countries, you know. So, but that, you know, the government has a downturn, and then that, where's that money? That money may be gone. So you can imagine how the citizens would feel about that. They've subscribed to a system that has been more or less mandated by the government, and that they have to do this. And then when they get older, you know, maybe there's something happened. I know in our area they have what's called the superannuation. They have pensions, but they also have superannuation where people pay. It's kind of like social security, but the money is put in the superannuation, and then the government holds that, and then they invest it. Not the government, the different, government-authorized groups hold that money, and they in turn invest it. So sometimes they're trying to make more money, but sometimes they lose, and sometimes they could lose everything. So at the end, no one can get their superannuation. Well, the government says it's going to guarantee it. But who's to say? Such is Kali Yuga. What's the certainty? So it's a very speculative kind of, and there's a lot of corrupting principles of greed and so on, and corruption itself. The Vedic system is very simple, very, very simple. Basically in the Grihastha life, especially. And the Grihastha ashram is very important. As mentioned in the Shastra, in one sense, in the social sense, at least, in the social sense, the Grihastha ashram is the most important ashram, because the Grihastha ashram has to take care of the brahmachari. The brahmacharini ashram has to take care, you know, look after financially, and the vanaprastha, and look after the sannyas, the renunciates. So socially, they're the most important, and it's their duty to make sure that the students are cared for, whatever their needs are, the retirees. Even if they're not your own parents, you know, the Grihastha ashram has to help. Actually, one of the requirements of Grihastha ashram, one of the obligations, is to give in charity. Although it is said that all will have to give in charity, that the Grihastha ashram is especially meant for giving in charity and looking after the others. So socially speaking, it's the most important ashram. Of course, spiritually, the brahmanas, the renunciates, the Vaishnavas, they are the most important on that level. But socially, very, very important. But all are important. Therefore, Varnashrama and the whole Vedic society is very nicely set up, and is a system that is created. And that Krishna says right in Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvanyam Mahashishnam, I created this system. Gunakam Bhagasa. So it's a very nice system. So you don't. There's not huge a burden. Huge burden. So Prabhupada makes a point of this, that the brahmanas, now that's one side of things. And another side, as mentioned here, They were never attentive to banking. They didn't need, they were looked after. But on the side of the Brahmanas, they cannot allow themselves be corrupted, potentially be corrupted by accumulating too much money. It may take away, may distract them from their primary purpose of giving education and performing the necessary ceremonies that are so required in society. So Brahmanas should not be distracted. So, you know, there was one story of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati that, if I remember correctly, I'll just generalize it, but he had an invitation from the king of Tripura to come and be the pundit in his court. At one time, the king of Tripura heard a lecture by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, and he was so impressed that he invited him to be the court pundit. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati wasn't very inclined. He was thinking, oh, this is an opportunity to preach. And then he went. Now, I can't remember whether he actually went or he declined even before, because he was thinking that if I accept, I may be in a compromised position, because, you know, I will be on receiving salary from the king in his court. And then because I'm receiving salary, I may become attached to that money. And if I become attached, then, you know, I'll be overly careful about what I say. If I say something, even though it may be something absolute truth from the Shastra, but if the king is not very inclined to hear it, he may be displeased with me. He may do something against me, take away or reduce my salary. So in this way, the Brahmanas can't allow themselves to be compromised. They're very, very important. They can't allow themselves to be compromised and be distracted by money. So they have to be supported, and at the same time, from their side, they shouldn't be thinking to accumulate. Unfortunately, in Kali Yuga, we see those who are Brahmanas by birth these days, many of them, not all of them, but many of them are distracted by accumulating money. And more and more, have become distracted by that. And instead of living their life as Brahmins and performing Brahminical duties, they are living lives more like businessmen or intellectuals, but in a materialistic sense, for money. And I remember, you know, and some of them are doing priestly activity. Many of them have given up priestly activities. But some of them are doing priestly activities. I remember one young Indian couple came to the temple and asked if ISKCON could bless their house, and they were coming to us because they had gone to another Hindu group, and the Hindu group had told them, yes, we can come, but we charge $5,000. Mm-hmm. And they said, we're just a young couple. We've got a new house, but we owe a lot of money to the bank, and we can't afford $5,000. To have, you know, they want to do this ritual and they charge. And actually, I know in Bali, I go to Bali a few times a year. In Bali, many of the people in the village, the Brahmanas are so, what's the word? They're so impassioned about charging to perform rituals that, you know, even for ceremonies, especially in the poorer villages, you know, they have the death ceremony when someone in the family dies. But the Brahmanas are charging so much money to perform that ceremony, and they won't budge from their figure. This is what the devotees have told me, that the poor people, they have to wait till someone else dies, so that the two or three of them people, the elderly parents have died or something, that between the three of them, they can get money to pay the Brahmanas to perform the ceremony. Sad situation, isn't it? So, and they say, just not only for the death ceremony, but in general, so many ceremonies, and when they come, they charge so much money that people have to save for. And that's why people, they tell me that people are becoming quite resentful to the Brahmana community, especially there, because they've become so greedy for money. And their first thought is how much money, they're going to charge. So this shouldn't be the mentality of a Brahmana. The mentality of a Brahmana is just to live very simply, very humbly. And actually, it is said that if one has got other desires to live very luxuriously or live with a greedy mind, making lots and lots of, then actually he's not truly a Brahmana, because guna karma, the Brahmana is by not by just the birth, as Krishna says, chattu mayam mayashrit, guna karma. It is by guna and karma, the qualities of the person and the actions of the person. It's not just by birth. By birth, I am Brahman. Just like Prabhupada used to say, if someone's father and mother, they are high court judge. Does that mean automatically you are the high court judge? Your mother and father, high court judge. But are you automatically? No. We have to see. Just because you were born in the family of high court judges doesn't mean, oh, now you are high court judge. You've grown up and now automatically you'll be the high court judge. No, how can it be? You have to show by your qualities, by your education, by your nature. So if someone is born in the family but not acting accordingly. There's one story of Brihaspati he had some sons and he was educating them. Brihaspati, of course, is the priest of the devas, and he was educating them. But the sons were being educated, but a lot of the time they were going to some asura friends they had, and they were engaging in frivolous activities and playing with them and wrestling and all that. So Brihaspati was not very happy about that, because they were supposed to be learning the shastras and all the different branches of knowledge. But then quite often he couldn't find them, and then he find them, and then they were there, over there. So after some time, he became very angry and he cursed them. And he cursed them to become restless. You like wrestling so much? And he cursed them to become, okay, you become restless. And actually, it is said that this story relates to the wrestlers in the Tecumseh. Who were those wrestlers? Chanura and Mushtika. They were the sons of Brihaspati formerly that were cursed, but they were favored. In the end, they were killed by Krishna and Balaram and released from their position and returned back. But that's a story from one of the Puranas. It's a situation that people misuse their... they've got an opportunity, they've got a facility, but maybe they're misusing. Just like Prabhupada a few times said, like the Queen of England, she must have been the most pious lady because she's got such a high position. She's got aristocracy, she's got wealth, she's got beauty, she's got so many things. So to get to that position, someone must have been performing so many pious activity in the previous life. But now what they're doing in this life, oh, that may be something else. So if someone is abusing, then it is said that due to that, all the pious credits are reduced. What would have normally come to you because of perhaps you're acting sinfully, they start to be reduced. Ayushriyam yaso dharmam lokana sishya eva cha. There's one verse like that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that your longevity of life, your strength, your beauty, your education, all these things gradually reduce, even though you have earned them by your previous sukriti, your pious activities. You've earned them, and you're supposed to get them, and you will get them. But if you act sinfully, then they will be reduced even as they come. Instead of, 5 years of or 10 years of nice wealth, it will be reduced in this life because of what you're doing now. So, of course, people don't understand these things. That's the problem. That's the problem today. People don't. There's no education, and people are very society, there's no Vedic education, and there's no real Brahmanas anymore to give that education. People are very... Prabhupada says society is can be divided into two, regulated and unregulated. Regulated means they're following the Vedic injunctions. Unregulated means they don't follow anything. You would say, how many are following the Vedic and unregulated, not following, you know, in Kali Yuga, almost everyone is living unregulated. So they don't understand these things. They don't understand the consequences. And educators in general, they are the like the Brahmin class. According to Shastra, as I said, they're not meant to charge for it, but they're supposed to be provided for. So they don't have to worry about that type of thing. If someone's always worrying about how I'm going to get money, how I support, they just leave it to the other members of society, and they concentrate on their study and giving education, because that takes a lot. That takes a lot to study. That takes a lot to understand these things, to study, give knowledge, and to do, know all the different ceremonies, all the different yagyas. One has to become a vipra, very learned. That takes all your time to do that type of thing. Years and years of training in that when you're young, and ongoing learning throughout your whole life. And if you're a Brahmin, you've got a nature like that, you'll very easily just like to do that. You'll be very happy and satisfied in your whole life just studying and teaching. Just studying and teaching and doing these things. You'll be very, very happy doing that. By nature, it'll just come easy for you. Others, money-making, that's vicious. And actually, if someone has got the nature for making money, I remember Bhakti Charu Maharaj when we were at our GBC meeting, and someone was saying, maybe we should have, we're having a college, and maybe we should have a business course, how to make money, you know, like a Vaishya thing. Someone was suggesting. Bhakti Charu Maharaj's comment on that was, well, if someone is actually a Vaishya, why do we need their school? Because their nature is, they just learn how to execute it in the family. The Vaishyas, they would learn of business and in the family. There was no need of big colleges. They're like these days, you know, in colleges and so on. They have get an MBA or something like that, you know, and then you learn these things, how to do business. But actually, in the Vedic society, there was no need of that. Brahmanas training, but there's no need how to make money. This was done in the family, and you had a nature already. Your nature was like that. Or your nature is sudra. You were artisan. You're a stonemason. You're a carpenter. You were this, you know. So your nature's like that. You were already inclined to it. You were good at it. And how do you learn? In the family you would learn. Because of the generations going right back, they would be taught from their father, and they would be taught. And so in the family you just learn these. There's no need of big colleges or anything like that. This is a Vedic society. No need in the Sudra area, in the Vaishya area, Kshatriya and Brahmana, maybe there's a need for this education, the Brahmanas would give. But even if there's a need for training in various areas of art and all this type of thing, even the Brahmanas could teach that as well. Even if some things couldn't be completely understood in the family, the Brahmanas were available to teach those things. So Vedic society works very nicely. Varnashrama works very nicely. And especially Brahmanas, they had to be respected. But at the same time, Brahmanas had to act like Brahmanas. If one is not acting in a respectable way, then how he expects to be respected. Of course, one shouldn't demand respect, but one should command respect just by their position and their qualities. So Prabhupada makes his, going back to this point, the Brahmanas in society were never attentive to banking money for future retired life. Immediately they would get some money, they would use it for their yagya or their, so they'd use it. And Prabhupada would say that to us quite often, said that if you get some money, immediately just spend it. There's many letters like that, actually, that he would say, don't accumulate so much. Don't be in this mentality of accumulation. We are Vaishnava. We are Vaishnava Brahmins. And just if someone gives something, then you can immediately spend it. We shouldn't be worried about accumulating and keeping huge amounts in the bank, but we should be taking it. And of course, you know, maybe temporarily we keep something there, but the idea is we're going to spend it. So I remember a reporter asked Prabhupada, and he said, your divine grace, how much, and he was a bit aggressive. He said, how much money does your movement make? And Prabhupada said, oh, we could spend all the money of the world tomorrow. Yeah, that was his answer. We could spend all the money of the world tomorrow because we were utilizing it in the service of the Lord. And actually, everything belongs to Krishna. He is the one who is sending, not others. He is sending, and especially he gives to his devotees to utilize nicely. Now the brahmanas would glorify the supreme. They were glorifying Krishna. Krishna offered respect to them. And they were provided with all the necessities of life. And Prabhupada makes a point, though, that the brahmanas were not, so to speak, flatterers of the king. So one has to be careful for that, that, you know, you don't get into that mentality that, oh, I need something, therefore let me go. And no, they would just go there and they would praise the kings. And the kings themselves were praiseworthy. They were praiseworthy. And so it was just natural. There wasn't, at least it is mentioned here, in those times, there wasn't underlying motives, and it was very, and they were very dignified, and the kings felt encouraged by the brahmanas and by their association, and they would provide ample for the brahmanas and their families, and so Krishna was glorified, and the brahmanas, by chanting Krishna's glories, they're glorified. And anyone else who is chanting the Supreme Personality of God, its glories, they are also glorified. So this is the true purpose. And it is said that for a devotee, all the good qualities follow that devotee just naturally. But the devotee should always remain humble. And we see the example of Lord Chaitanya. I mean, Lord Chaitanya came to taste the love of Radha for Krishna, and also he wanted to show how to be a devotee. He came as a devotee. He would always be humble. He would always offer respects to, and indeed, in his Shikshashtakam, he said, offering all respects to others in a humble state of mind. What is it? Lower than the straw in the street, more tolerant than the tree, isn't it? So what is that verse? Chinarapi suni chinatarorapi sayushna amanina manarina kirtani asadahi sadahari. So this is Lord Chaitanya's instruction, and he also showed by example how he respectful. Even when some others would criticize him, who was that, a Moggallila? I remember that. Was it a Moggallila or just maybe a Mogga? There was a Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's son-in-law, and one time Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was and his wife, they were cooking, they invited the Lord to lunch, and they were cooking a big feast, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya knew Amoga's nature, that, and he specifically didn't invite Amoga, because Amoga, by his nature, was a little critical. So he thought, if I invite him, he may criticize something. So he didn't, but somehow or other, as they were preparing this huge feast, they wanted to offer so many nice things to Lord Chaitanya. It wasn't as if Lord Chaitanya asked for that, but they wanted to offer. So somehow or other, Amoga was at the side door of the kitchen, and he crept in and he saw all the offerings, and he said, oh, so many offerings. This is enough for not just one man, but 10 men or 20 men. So both Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and his wife were very upset, and they started beating their chest, and his wife was beating her. Oh, we are ruined. He has contaminated the whole thing. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya picked up a broom, and just started chasing him. And then Lord Chaitanya was there. And actually, I think Lord Chaitanya was very humble. Actually, what he has said is correct. He said, "I am a sannyasi. How I can shoot? I shouldn't be eating so many, such volumes and such rich foods and like that." Of course, later on, Amoghara had to suffer, wasn't it? He had to cholera. He got cholera, and he was near death, and lying on his bed. And Lord Chaitanya visited him and put his hand on his chest and said, "You are a Brahmana. This is the place of your heart should be a pure place. Why have you allowed envy to go there?" And after Lord Chaitanya had done that, the next day Amoga was cured of his disease. So we learn from the life of Lord Chaitanya what his mood was, and we see the different stories. And so we should always keep these stories in the forefront of our mind, and how to behave, how a devotee should behave, especially the topmost levels. Maybe we cannot immediately come to those topmost levels, but at least we know what the goal is. This is the goal. The example of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the example of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates, the example of Srila Prabhupada, the example of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. We have all these examples. So we know how to act, and we have to always keep in touch by reading these shastras, and then this is always in our mind then, how we should be behaving, reading and associating with other devotees, present devotees, and so on. So everyone is glorified. Krishna is worthy of all glories. And the praying brahmanas and others will glorify themselves by chanting the glories of the Lord. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai. I'll read this verse again. Svayam cha guru bi viprai sararai stavarai api ashivi yujyamanonye vandibis cha vishat puram. Then the Lord personally entered the city accompanied by elderly relatives and invalid brahmanas with their wives, all offering benedictions and singing the glories of the Lord. Others also praise the glories of the Lord. Hare Krishna. Has anyone got any question or comment?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Navadvip here.
Hare Krishna Navadvip.
Yes, please accept my humble obeisances, Maharaj.
All glories to Prabhupada.
All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Okay, I have I have two questions and one request and one comment. Okay, so my first comment, I want to do the comment thing. Wednesday's program was very, very enlivening for me. And I want to thank you very much, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
And then one of my questions is maybe can you say something or a comment about chocolate?
Chocolate. What do you want to know about chocolate?
Well, I mean, is it okay to use it or whatever? There's been some questions or, mysteries about it. Is it okay to have it or not?
The thing is that technically speaking, it's got caffeine in it. So Prabhupada always told us to avoid any intoxicants. But I'm told that the levels of caffeine are so small that it's hardly worth mentioning. So I know that some devotees take chocolate and others don't. So it's been a long going discussion for, I've been hearing about it at least for 30 or 40 years. So I'll just leave it there. That's my statement on it.
Well, Maharaj, too, and I was just, another question is does Krishna wear neck Tulsi beads?
Krishna, when we dress him?
What? Does Krishna wear Tulsi beads?
You mean in the spiritual world?
Well, yes, or whatever. Does
you
he wear
Tulsi beads? Are like we wear neck beads and stuff. But I haven't seen like that. But I know Lord Chaitanya does. But I haven't seen Krishna. But he does wear different ornaments and sometimes Tulsi. Lord Chaitanya wears the neck bead, but Krishna himself doesn't wear like we wear neck beads. These are for devotees to wear neck beads to remind us that we're the servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, but I am not to my knowledge that Krishna wears exactly like that. But he does wear different ornaments, and Tulsi
there in the spiritual world. She's there in a personified form. So, but there are different ornaments that he wears, and I can't remember reading about Tulsi wood ornaments, but possibly I'd have to research that a little bit.
Well, thank you for that answer, Maharaj. Also, too, the other question is like all through the past gurus and everything, were they always like playing harmonia and singing those beautiful songs? I mean, is that the way it always was?
You mean going back how long? Of course.
Srila Prabhupada, spiritual master, and then, all just backtracking. I mean, all of them used to sing just beautifully like that and before they gave classes and stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, Radha and Krishna are dancing and playing the gopis, and Srimati Radharani is very expert. And so it all comes originally from the spiritual world. And as far as our sampradaya, I mean, we have our style. Some of the acharya in Lord Chaitanya's time, there wasn't. You don't read about harmonium, because I think that was a more later thing. He was mainly the call, the mridanga cartel, sometimes conches, different bugles, sometimes different instruments. You read about in Lord Chaitanya's time. So Prabhupada had the mood like Lord Chaitanya. Mainly we have those types of instruments. But then again, Prabhupada did say that in the Western countries, to attract people to Krishna consciousness, we can use various instruments of those countries. And there's a statement from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur where he said that in the future, he was talking about in the future, kirtan will be performed in countries around the world, and the people of those countries will use their musical instruments to perform the kirtan. So Bhaktivinoda, there's one statement from Bhaktivinoda Thakur which says that the various countries of the world will do the kirtan in their style. When I travel around, actually, I see that, because I know in Indonesia they have a type of kirtan. It's like chanting Hare Krishna, but it's a certain type of melody that a little bit, they style Balinese, and I know I went to Sulawesi, which is another one of the islands, and they had drums there that from their tradition. Not exactly mridangas, but kind of different types of drums, and they were playing them in the kirtan. So just naturally they were doing it. So there's one statement from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. As far as Prabhupada, Prabhupada himself played harmonium. You heard already from Prabhupada played harmonium.
Yes.
And also, so many of the Prabhupada kirtan tapes you hear, the sitar or the other instruments in the back. So definitely these instruments are there. Main thing Prabhupada always said was the chanting. You have to make sure. And I said the other morning that, or the other night, or maybe at that one time in Delhi, Prabhupada asked the devotees what they thought of the kirtan and the pandal. And everyone was offering opinion. And Prabhupada said, someone said, I thought it was very good. And Prabhupada said, oh, I don't know if it was so good, because there's too much clanging and banging. He said, mainly thing, you have to hear the nice chanting. So that's the main thing. So if the instruments can accompany that, then that's very wonderful.
Yes, Maharaj, I was really impressed. It was a very difficult location there Wednesday, and I was just like looking around, and just your chanting was just so wonderful, and it was just literally, bringing people to the facility there. I was just overwhelmed by that.
And all the devotees together, and Mahesh and Brihan also, their beautiful chanting they were doing. So and when the devotees were responding and enthusiastically chanting, the whole scene was like the spiritual world.
Mm. Yes, Maharaj. Hey, but anyway, Maharaj, one more thing. I just want to request that you can pray for me to come to tonight's program. Just pray to Krishna for me, for I can come.
Hare Krishna. Kavi
Chandramaj.
Kavi Chandramaj rang me yesterday, last night, and he said, please pass on respects to Navadvipa.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Go ahead, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Yes.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, what does it mean that the Brahmana becomes old and invalid? Because the duty of Brahmana is to teach. It is not to earn money or to fight battles. So how can he become invalid, because knowledge is always with him and he can distribute it?
Yet no, invalid, you have to understand the context of that. That invalid means something, maybe he's, because of his old age, he cannot walk so well. Maybe he has to have the cane, and he has to be helped to walk because of the old age. That is the meaning of the invalid. Not invalid in the knowledge, but invalid in the physical position. You understand?
Okay.
You understand? So that is the meaning of the word invalid in the context of this translation. So sometimes due to the old age, they are physically impaired, so they're not able to walk so well, and sometimes they have to be assisted. Just because someone is like that, they should not be neglected, they should be cared for. So the prime duty of the Brahmin is to give the knowledge and to give the education and do all these different yajna and ceremony, and that is their prime. Unfortunately, my comment was that I'm seeing that not every Brahmana in India and other parts of the world is like that. They are more concentrating on the money and they're not concentrating on these things. But the Brahmana, his duty has to be, priority has to be, give the knowledge and give the education. That is my point.
Okay. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Maharaj, for such a wonderful class, especially about the duties of Brahmanas and present day. Very nice. Thank you. And just reminded me of present day, there are some series they are showing of Chanakya Pandit. And there is a DVD that's available. Actually, it's a whole series of them, and it's very, very educational. And now they have another series called Chandragupta Maurya, and how Chanakya is training this king, right? Because this is right from the Bhagavatam, where King Nanda was very atrocious dealing with his citizens. So Chanakya tried to take him away and find the right person. And Chandragupta was at a very young age that he found, and Chanakya personally trained him to take over. So right now they're showing that, and showing so many wonderful qualities of a true Brahmana. So it's very educational. It's called Chandragupta Maurya, if anybody wants to eventually maybe get a DVD. But it's showing in UK right now. Very nicely done, and it's very educational. So I think, you know, if we devotees can get that information of practically also how it was practiced by people like Chanakya.
Thank you. That's very good information, because I think this information should be widespread. And thank you. That's very valuable.
I have a question, Maharaj. Hare Krishna.
Yes.
This is Radnarpini. Thank you for the lovely class. I really appreciated it. You were speaking in class in regards partially about the Varnashram system, mm-hmm. and I understand the beauty and the perfection of this system. And I'm just thinking, you know, how you were saying how the older people, as we get older, you know, to caretake for them, to take care of them, and to respect them. And I was raised this way, because I was raised in the Philippines. In fact, my younger brother is caretaking for my mother at the moment. But I was thinking, for us who live in the West, and for the system that we have here, how now a lot of us are middle-aged or even more than middle-aged, and we're starting to think about our old age. And how is it, I don't expect my children to take care of me. In fact, I don't think they will take care of me physically. And I have worked in an old, they call it an old folks home, but that's a pretty bad term for it. They're trying to say long-term facility, meaning you stay there and that's the last place you go before you die. And I've worked in a facility like that for about 4 years, and it's some place that when you go visit that, you want to stay very healthy until the day you pass away, hopefully. So what are we to do? Because not everybody, not all the devotees are going to die young. Some of us are, some people might live longer. And where do we go and what do we do? Who's going to take care of us?
great question. I think you scared him away.
Oh, I didn't mean to.
No, I'm joking.
I didn't mean to.
It was a great, a wonderful
question.
Okay,
we're connected again. I'm sorry for Bose. We crashed, but now we're connected up again.
Does she have to repeat the question? It was a very good question. Does she need to repeat that?
Yeah, I didn't get it all.
Oh, I'm sorry. Where did you drop off,
Ramananda? I remember hearing about your younger brother. Was it in the Philippines caretaking?
Oh yes, my younger brother in the Philippines. He's caretaking. Well, he's not in the Philippines. He's actually in San Francisco, and he's the wealthier one in the family. But he's taking care of my mother, and she's in her 87 right now. But what I was saying, Maharaj, is that, I have four children, and I don't expect any of them to physically take care of me, and I don't think they're able to anyway. But as a lot of us devotees are getting older, if we don't die young, if we do actually start to live till we get older, we're gonna not be, we're gonna need some help. We're gonna need somebody to take care of us. And I said that I had worked in a long care facility, which they call an old folks home, but that's a bad term, but long care facility is the name they gave it. And that's where you go for the last part of your life until you pass away. And I worked in taking care of old people for about 4 or 5 years. And it's a great impetus to keep healthy until the day you pass away, because it's not a nice place to be. And I'm wondering, for devotees, I mean, is there such a place? Is something being discussed about that? Where do we go? And also, like, some people might have strokes and be, like you said, not capable of taking
dementia
care of themselves.
As well.
So I have to also say that I have great respect for this devotee that just spoke, Navadweep, because I know he's taking care of his mother, and I know the gentleness and love he gives. And the difficulty.
Yeah, I think that the culture should be that the children, feel it's their duty and obligation, and not only that though, but I think that they should have a natural affection for their parents and want to do it.
But
and
the reality, Maharaj, is it's not there anymore. That the culture is not like that anymore. And we're getting.
I mean, I think they should be cultivated in such a way as to understand. I mean, even in materialistic society, there's some mood to that. It's being lost in time, but there's many children who take in their parents and look after them and feel quite comfortable. As far as our society is gone, we do have our hospital in Bombay that any devotee can go to and get the treatment, and we're starting up some facilities for more elderly devotees, and I believe there's a place in Vrindavan that they're getting together, also in Mayapur. But we're a little limited. We can offer something. We do want to develop that area, but to provide everyone, that would be nice. We'll probably try to work towards that, provide for all our devotees, elderly devotees. But I really think, I think it has to come a lot from the family myself. I really, that was the Vedic system. I agree with what you say. It's maybe not like that now. The mood may not be like now. So we have to do the best we can in the circumstances. But I'm talking about a principle on a practical level. What you say is, certainly, the situation in many situations. But on the matter of the principle of the thing, I think that at least we have to present what the ancient system was, and it's not something it's difficult really, and that it can be done. The non-devotees are doing it. In many cases they're looking after their parents, and I remember my parents looking after my grandmother, and my grandfather were living with my mother and father. So it's not too long ago, and my grandfather died, and my grandmother was living at our home. So it's only like a generation or a couple of generations back that even the non-devotee society was doing it. So I think that that has to be instilled in our children, really, at least the principle of it. You may have some reason why you can't do it. That's, you know, that may be that's understandable. You know, it may be difficult, but at least the principle of it, I think. And as far as devotees, yeah, as I just said, that we're developing. We want to develop more. We're talking about it, definitely.
Well, you know what? I was thinking, Maharaj, just when you were saying that, that also you were saying about some way that devotees could make money. You know, some, especially householders, they have a very difficult time earning money. That this might be something that might be looked into if they could create facilities for elderly devotees and, you know, also get compensated. The facility could get compensated by the specific government or area that they're in.
Yeah. But yeah, I've talked to devotees in various countries who have told me that the governments of those places offer certain financial facility if someone wants to, you know, make a place to look after the elderly. The government will assist them financially to do that. So that's a good idea and something. And I think that this should be developed in each place, you know, each country. And if devotees who have got some money are they think to help others. And actually, when you go to India, you see these types of things. The rich people, at least in the past generations, and even today it still goes on to some degree, but in the past you will see that there's dharmashalas, there's anukutas, there's all sorts of different guest houses and pilgrimage houses in the holy places and programs for feeding the poor. So, you know, in the Vedic times, the culture was like that. So, in the Western society, they have some mood towards it. They have different programs. But it seems to come more from government than perhaps from private citizens quite often.
Remind Swami?
Yes.
I don't know if you can see what was typed into the chat, but I'll just read you this. This is... it's a question from Indu Pati Das. He's in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about your comment about Bhaktivinod Thakur's prediction.
Mm-hmm.
First says, will people sing the holy name in talent shows also? I asked him to clarify that, and then he says, Maharaj said they will chant the holy name with their own instruments, so I'm asking, will also famous musicians and people who are trying to become musicians will sing the holy names in their shows?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, is that just a comment he's making, or he's asking a question about that?
Yeah, I think what he's saying is that, Indupati, can you comment? Are you able to speak? I think what he's asking is about is the holy names will become more prevalent in society. Will we see it as a new form of entertainment? I think that's what he's saying.
A new in that sense. That's already happened in the past in so many different famous. You know, look at the Beatles, you know, and Prabhupada. Very much encourage their participation in the chanting, and said because they are so famous that this would have so much influence around the world, and it did. And the bringing of the Hare Krishna and that album, many countries got to number one. So at the time, it affected a lot of people. So if musicians take it up, yes. But I think what Bhaktivinod Thakur was more referring to was just those who become devotees, who do kirtan. But they're living in various different countries of the world, that they would do the kirtan perhaps, in their style of voice, using the instruments that are quite traditional in that country. Because I know in some places are quite remote and they can't get mridangas or they can't get these instruments and they have limited access to association of devotees. You know, there's many places where they don't see devotees for many, many years sometimes. You know, they live in their own community. And they do the kirtan. They've learned how to chant, and they do the kirtan, and they use these. So I've been to quite a few like that, and I always encourage them to use their particular drums or the particular type of hand cymbals or other instruments. Point out the main thing is you have to be concentrating on the kirtan itself, and it's not just for some show, or not just entertainment, but it's actually it should be done in the mood of pure chanting. Any other questions?
Yeah, as you mentioned that old people are imitating young people these days, and if a devotee is like, he understands the rules and regulations, and he also understands the Vedic principles that he's supposed to take care of his old parents in a cultural regards. But if the behavior of the other parents are contradictory or interfering in devotion service and it's his peace of mind, so should he leave them for the sake of devotion, or she should still stick to the Vedic principles of taking care of them?
You mean if they're not devotees or something like that?
Yeah, they are not devotees, and as you said, they are behaving like young people and imitating them.
Well, I think he has a duty to care for his parents and be kind and to. But at the same time, he can always say that you know, why not? You're getting old, and now is a good time to take up the spiritual life. He should encourage them. But if they're doing it and it's becoming too much of a disturbance for everything, then maybe he has to think like that. But generally, one should not abandon the elderly parents. Maybe if they're devotee or non-devotee, generally, but it's sometimes exception if they're becoming very, very disturbance, then maybe he can consider some other type of alternative. But the general principle is that.
And many times it seems that devotees can actually preach a lot as they get senior, but they get involved in taking care of their parents or family. So what is primarily important is like presenting a Vedic culture to the world or preaching with full guns out?
One has to try to fulfill his obligations. And Prabhupada used to tell us, just like I am doing so many things, not that we only can do one thing. We have to become expert that we can do many things. So you have to increase your expertise. You have to increase your expertise. You simultaneously look after the parents and you do some preaching, and you have to balance everything just nicely.
Okay, Maharaj. Thank you.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Yes.
This is Maharani Devi Dasi. I think taking care of the elderly is an excellent way to preach. I know when Navadvip brought his mother here, mm-hmm. he turned her into a vegetarian. He put neck beads on her. All her food is offered, and she follows Ekadasi twice a month. And this is whether she likes it or not. And, yeah, but that's just a side comment. My real question is, you know, everyone is enlivened by your classes. You could hear how much appreciation everyone was giving you. And I was wondering if even after you leave, could you make arrangements to give class now and then, once every 2 weeks or once a month, please?
I'll try to do that, Maharani, Manaji, but it would depend on the time zone, and because you have it a certain time, and it's I know when I'm in Australia, that's like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning for us. So I certainly will try to continue on, and if I'm in an area where it's not too difficult to give a class, and or too late at night or too early in the morning, as far as the time zone, I'll definitely try to continue. Thank you for asking.
I just wanted to point out that this will be Maharaj's last class, except for this evening. We will try and broadcast the program this evening if anybody wants to listen in. Evening Hawaii time. It's at 6 o'clock. 2 hours out of the program. At least 2 hours. If anybody wants to listen in. But thank you so much, Maharaj, for your association, your mercy, and giving us this nice opportunity to associate with the sadhu.
Thank you very much. It's certainly been my pleasure to be able to give class like this and associate with devotees perhaps I would not normally have the opportunity to associate with. Some are in, I know, in distant countries, and I thank them for being able to participate in the class, even though we're sitting here. Just Prabhupada said, this is Yukta Vairagya, isn't it? We use the modern technology, and but we use it in Krishna's service. And so this is the, you know, in Prabhupada's time, Prabhupada used to talk about microphones and amplifiers and this and that and television. But now, in Prabhupada's time, there was an internet. And now the devotees are so ingenious that they've worked out how to use the internet and the computers in Krishna's service. So this is a very wonderful means. And I think that it's gathering momentum too. You know, we see all over the world that, I give lectures and sometimes I don't even know that it's being streamed or sent out. And people have approached me in other countries. So I listen to your class in such and such country, Maharaj, everywhere. I wasn't even aware, but it's such a wonderful medium. And I thank Ramananda Prabhu. He's done very valuable service and bringing devotee communities together. We can associate with each other, even though we live away. We've got other obligations and other commitments, but still we can come together and hear Srimad Bhagavatam class. Jai. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Jai.
Jai.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Hare Bo.
Hare Bo.